Tabletopped will start after the following messages.
Are you the kind of person or unspeakable nightmare horror who likes actual play podcasts, but occasionally wants a break from all the high fantasy heroics? If so, you should check out Negative Modifier, an actual play podcast that specializes in darker, more mature games. You can find us on YouTube, Twitch, or more or less anywhere else podcasts can be found.
Welcome back to another episode of Tabletop. Today, we're going to get a little table talky. We're going to talk about metagaming at the table and how to deal with it as a GM, whether it's good, whether it's bad, whether it's neutral, and you shouldn't feel anything about it. Who's here with me today to talk about this in a meta way?
It's anti-meta Rio.
Okay, and?
That's my Digimon title.
I really like that. It's true anti-meta neutrality.
Rio-mon act. It would be my title.
True neutral shade.
And I'm your host, Nick. And let's get into it. First, Shade, what is metagaming? What is table talk? You have a definition up, so yep. Let's do it.
So it's in any kind of role playing game. It's a term to describe when a player is using real life knowledge concerning the state of the game to determine their character's actions when said character has no relevant knowledge or awareness under the circumstances. So as a quick example to that, if you have played a lot of D&D 5e. And you know the stat block for a beholder, and you utilize that knowledge to your advantage.
Yeah, to say that quicker, it'd be like if you're a level one hero who's playing like a 12-year-old and your village is being attacked by a troll that you've never seen before, and you're like, oh, I'm going to hit it with fire.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you're metagaming because you know trolls can't regenerate if you hit them with fire.
That was 5 seconds longer.
Yeah, before you even know that they have healing.
Got your ass.
He only got my ass if I agree he's got my ass. And I don't agree.
Just say that quicker. Let me say it longer.
I said it better.
All right, let's continue on. I think that's a great example, Rio. I think that like stat blocks is one very common way. Another way that we've talked about off mic before is like somebody knowing another class and so giving kind of either unsolicited or solicited advice about how to play a class that they don't know or something. These are all part of it. It's like I kind of think of it as there's in combat and out of combat metagaming.
One of the things I really hate when I'm running a game is when we're in combat and the players are all like, okay, I have 20 hit points. I have 19 hit points.
Yeah,
I can heal 20. It's like that's metagaming to me. But it's also like, is it on a loud metagaming? Because it's also like, how strictly do you want to enforce these rules? Because obviously it's a game and you need to play the game, but obviously like you don't see numbers over other people's head unless you're playing in an isekai, in which that might be part of the world.
So,
oh my god, that'd be
it solves all of your problems.
I have to write some notes.
Oh, check out that NASA game that I sent.
Yeah, so
the who?
The NASA. NASA made a TTRPG 5e, well, not strictly 5e, but a D&D module, and it's an isekai.
Oh, nice.
You really enjoy it.
Will you send that link to me directly?
I sent it in our Discord, and I can send it. But
if you sent it in a chat, I've lost it. Okay. I haven't sent it.
I will probably be running it for us.
Okay, perfect.
But this is the thing about metagaming.
All right, we have a topic, and we're talking about that.
Yeah, I'm getting back on topic. But like the thing about metagaming is that there's certain levels of it that some people can find super enjoyable at a table. We've talked about combat before.
Cheaters.
How some people really enjoy like a more strategic combat experience, like Steven, myself, Shade, when we were doing the Argot Siege, we were all sort of like strategizing and like pushing pieces around a table and being like, this is what we're like, you know, being generals.
To be fair, that was set up to be, you were commanders commanding an army.
Totally.
There had to be some strategizing above board.
Yeah. So, but I think that there's like a certain level of that in wargaming of like, this is the strategy. This is the meta, if you would, of like how we can get through an encounter that people can really enjoy. So like, where's the line, do you think, between metagaming or a table talk that is just people enjoying the game in their own way. And maybe as a GM, we should just like, we might have our druthers, but we don't go into it, or.
Here's a way.
Okay.
You know, if you're trying to do like a horror game.
Yeah.
And you have the one who's like, ah, I'm not scared of this. My character's not going to like, there's that sort of like. Refuse to buy in metagaming.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we're doing a horror campaign. Your character is going to be scared. Because I think one time I was running a game in college and I said, okay, you guys walk into a room. Both of you, like, you just sort of like lose your breaths because you just see something so like horrifying and disgusting that it causes you to gag. It's like, my character wouldn't gag. Don't play my character.
Yeah.
You don't lose anything, but to say that your character is never shook, never shaken, nothing affects them, that's, I think, a type of, like, power metagaming.
Like power fantasy sort of.
Right.
Yeah, I think that there's also part of this is, like, kind of manifests itself in the I'm a level one, but I've killed a dragon kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like, the backstory stuff. So there's that part, that kind of metagaming, too, of, like, no, I'm playing myself as though I'm like a level 20, even though I'm a level one kind of thing. Yeah. So I totally get that too. But like, where is the line between this is just someone enjoying and like how they want to enjoy the game, and this is actively kind of disrupting the
process? There's no objective point to put that line, because that line's going to change based on the general vibe. There's nowhere to there's nowhere to draw that.
Where does that line usually feel for you guys? Like, where is that line?
I'm way further back. I'm like, don't enjoy this game. Play it correctly.
Oh, jeez.
Very funny.
I will say for me, if the metagaming is such that I love it when my players will strategize at the in combat. I know that you only have 6 seconds between blah 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 blah. Abstract it. It's fine. Sometimes I might rein it in if there's like okay, this is getting a little out of hand. But generally speaking, I think it's really cool to see, and you could, you know, put it in a cinematic way and say like, you know, we know that running water is going to be bad for this vampire, and
but how do you know?
Yeah, so like, I mean, the how do you know is going to be a good question, and I think that you as a GM can kind of challenge that. You could say, well, hold on now, how do you know that? Tell me, and then put the player on the spot to give us a reason as to how.
Can I throw a little a sticky wicket in there for that?
Ooh, because I love the term sticky wicket.
Me too, man. Me too. Because I've always felt this way on the opposing side of this, of like, you as a GM also have to be aware of like care in world knowledge that the characters would have versus, you know, like you said, I know as a player, running water, vampires don't mix. I'm going to try to use running water to my advantage. Okay, that's like, how would you know that? Have you ever encountered a vampire? But it's also like, maybe I know more about the Duke of this town than the DM says, because, you know, like, a Duke's a major political figure or whatever, and like, there are rumors around about the Duke, and like, my character would just know that, and I don't have to find that information. I just would already know it. So there's like a weird thing about in-game knowledge that I've always struggled with, about like, how do you find it? How can you use it? Because maybe it is the case that like there's folk tales about vampires if they're so prevalent in this world.
That's the thing. Like, you have to set that, I guess. Tell us, like, are vampires considered real? Because like, in a lot of the games that I play, I think sometimes, like with Franco, I mean, he's not here to like respond, so I'll try to be short about it. It was like,
I'll be kind. Franco's a son of a bitch.
No. And he'll be like, oh, yeah, of course I know about trolls. I'm a level 2 adventurer. I'm like, but trolls, like, people aren't running across trolls constantly. And it's like, in your game world, how monstrous is it? How do players have knowledge of vampires? Or are these vampires coming out of the – are these the first vampires?
Would they be in a bestiary that is, like, sold in a bookstore? Or is like, it more like an abjuration or
in
whatever?
In the world of
like,
The Witcher – these books exist. The Witchers have been doing this for centuries, and you could be like, oh, yeah, I have a book on ghouls because I live next to a battleground or something, and we chipped in as a community and bought the book, and we all read it. versus if you're in The Witcher and a mech suit shows up. No one in that world is going to know what a mech suit is.
Yeah.
That's completely alien to the world. Mm-hmm. And having a player go, oh, no, I could obviously sit inside of that because that's where that's the pilot's chair. I'm like, no, but you wouldn't know that what a pilot's chair is. You wouldn't know that it's safe or how to operate the controls. You wouldn't know what a joystick is.
Yeah.
It's like, and back to my earlier saying, it's like the lines constantly have to shift and move. And what is player knowledge? Player knowledge has to be agreed upon kind of in a moment between the players and the DM.
Yeah.
And you're allowed to pitch what it is, but the DM as the arbitrator of the rules has to like, that's not a good reason.
Yeah.
Or right, yes, it's a very good reason.
No, I mean, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. It is going to matter situation to situation, and the DM and the player is going to have to make an agreement in this moment. I would say, you know, back to the vampire example, you know, It really does kind of depend on.
You should never turn your back to a vampire.
It does depend on what's at stake. I knew you'd like that because
dumb.
Because
if they'll ever drain from these puns.
If this is a narrative moment that is going to matter quite a lot. So you mentioned the trolls. Obviously, in our Waterdeep game, you guys had fought trolls before, but you recently encountered some trolls, and you encountered some souped-up version of trolls, too.
Super trolls.
You know, you knew to use fire or acid or any number of things.
Didn't we actually use lightning?
One of you did, yeah. Franco utilized lightning, but it caused a fire.
That and, fucker.
But,
always starting wildfires in combat.
But like you had fought them before, so I can kind of be like, yeah, of course you know how to do this. This is fine. But at the same time, I could, you know, I don't have to remind you about it. I don't have to, you know, if you do want to lean into it, I can make the decision, is this integral in this moment?
Yeah.
That they not know this.
Yeah.
I also really enjoy just flat out saying, as a reminder, we as players know this, mm-hmm. but we as characters may not, you know, like maybe the camera pulls back kind of moment. I've shown you a few things like you see your villains doing this thing. As players, you know this information. Your characters do not. But I want to set something up for your expectations.
That gave me a thought. I think to Nick's earlier question, where do you draw the line? Is the table talk sort of interacting with the challenge, or is it breaking the challenge? Mm.
Right.
And that, I guess, would be the line. It's like if the table.
What's the difference between those two?
Well, one is like, okay, we have a combat encounter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, here's what I can do. Here's what I can do. Here's what I can do. Okay. And then another one is like, okay, here's what we can do. Here's what we know the monsters have still available to them.
Mm-hmm.
How do we deny them their legendary resistance?
Yeah.
Let's use our worst spells to make them use their three legendary resistances. Mm-hmm. That's, now you're not interacting with it as a story. You're now interacting it physically as a numbers game.
That's interesting because I agree with you. Like instinctually, I'm just like, yeah, absolutely. Because that does kind of suck that you're using a.
You see a giant like eldritch being, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to use acid blast instead of like, I'm using meteor.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They're using, oh, you're using a cantrip? You're using a cantrip with a dex save to try and trip this thing up on its legendary. Okay. That kind of feels bad.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of like the idea of it being a – because you could kind of reframe that as, okay, well, I'm poking and prodding for a weakness, right?
You could reframe it, but you know that's not what you're doing.
No, of course.
And but also, this is a thing that I – like a thought that came up for me was it seems like it's also about knowledge where if you are a barbarian and you're going in with at a monster that has like a bludgeoning resistance, you have a big old hammer or something – like, do you as a GM say, like you connect this blow usually would break bones, like it would cause huge welting or whatever. You feel like kind of a rubbery feeling and you don't think that all of that kinetic energy went through the way it usually does. Is that like do you inform your players like this
you
thing has a
be.
Resistance?
Yeah, that's your job.
Yeah, yeah. Like so because if that's the case, then you're also kind of inviting a player to be like, okay, I need to switch my weapon or whatever. And then like saying like, okay, guys, like it has a resistance to bludgeoning damage, which is like
if
sort of
someone
inviting.
Says in character, this monster has a resistance to bludgeoning damage. That's metagaming. And I say,
oh,
no,
I disagree. Why? Because
what's
that's,
bludgeoning damage?
So
that's not a thing.
Okay, but like that's interesting to me. Because
I guess you could say like this thing like is resistant to hammers, and then you switch to a pick, and you're like, ah,
right? Because that's so. You know, I use that, and I use also like, oh, it's bloodied or something like that. We all know what the fuck bloodied means. We don't need to pretend like we don't, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just an announcement to the table. Hey, in case you zoned out for a second, I just tried to hit it with.
No, if you zone out, it's here, you're bad.
You're dead.
Okay, Rio. All right, Rio, let me hold that to you.
I've never zoned out in my life.
Not once.
I'm sure that those snores I heard that one time were completely different.
Falling asleep is not zoning out. It's
in a way.
Different.
In a way. But to your point, Shade, like, I think that announcement's interesting. I'm just because like a lot of the announcements you kind of use as a GM are kind of like small invitations to metagame. Like, let's move to a skill challenge. Like, you're talking to the king and the king says, of course the taxes are fair. And it's like, maybe as a GM, you're like, there's a shifting in size or something like that.
You keep going to as a GM. Like, metagaming isn't what a GM does.
But a GM can invite it, you know what I mean?
Right.
By saying,
if a GM invites it, then that becomes automatically allowed if the GM is setting the tone to think about it like this.
But, like, the invitation can be just saying something like, your hammer doesn't break its bones the way it usually does. It's like a descriptive thing because it's all about information.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing for me is, like, where I don't like metagaming is sort of a mechanical thing of, okay, so the king says, of course the taxes are fair, and somebone rolls low on their dice and says, and I'm like, you believe, yeah, that's right. And then two other people are like, you know what, I'm going to roll.
Right.
Like that kind of stuff.
I don't like that.
That kind of feels metagamey to me, and it also feels sort of like this is the person who's studying it.
The role represents the people trying to do this conversation.
Yeah.
Because if you ever having a real conversation where someone talks to you, says, hey, will you loan me $1? And you say no. And then, like, their two friends go, hey, can you give me, you're not going to say yes to either one of them. You've already said no.
Yeah. So there's sort of
what are you doing?
Yeah. There's like a thing there where it feels as though
the group tries to roll as many dice as possible.
Let's keep rolling until we get the result we want, because we know that the low number means that we didn't get the right or some sort of information that we want.
Mm-hmm.
That feels metagamey to me, but also as a GM, you're sort of inviting sort of like a, hey, like, you think that this person might be lying, roll, and we'll see. And then you're like, low roll? You don't know.
And
why would you as a GM tell them that their character thinks they might be lying?
Well, like, the character's like, you know, do I trust them? And it's like, roll or something like that.
Well, then you roll for, then you, like, you go, oh, no information, or yes, no information.
So, I mean, but that gets back to the idea that every role should matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think if I was in that situation as a GM and, you know, I really wanted it to be like, maybe this king isn't on the up and up, but you need to be uncertain, I would call for the role. If it should be, if I know that they're just going to find out, you know, I will just say it was a passive insight and it's a very low insight. This guy sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just go ahead and offer that information. you know, you get a gut feeling without a role. But I think that I really wouldn't call for a role too much unless that is a pivotal part of a mystery.
Yeah.
Another
thing to me as well is, like, and this is as a storyteller and someone who's like a trained actor and stuff, I feel like metagaming is a response to stakes. People want to lower stakes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I understand that feeling completely because you have the attachments to these characters and your attachment to the world you're playing in, all that kind of stuff. You want things to go well. And so you're metagaming to try to increase your odds of things going well. And I totally appreciate that. And if that's the game that they want to play, maybe it's not a problem if you make it clear with your GM beforehand of like, I was talking to Mac the other day, friend of the pod, Mac, and he was like, yeah, at the beginning of one of my games, they just told me, like, we want things to be hard and, like, challenges to appear, but we want to win. Like, we want a game where we have a story where we kind of leave the ring a hero and, like, that we have surmounted this mountain kind of thing. And so Mac is just like, yeah, that's totally fine. I'm going to throw up obstacles or whatever, but you all know that things aren't going to be bad. You know, like, things are going to be okay in the end. And that's the game that they wanted to play. And I guess if you have that kind of conversation, maybe it's okay. You know, I'm just not sure.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that game would even look like. Oh, a game we know we can't lose? Like,
well, it's just like
it's
where,
5e.
Where they can take big swings. So like there's a giant like fish. They're playing a Planescape or not Planescape, a Spelljammer. And so they're like there's a giant space whale. It's about to devour our Spelljammer, like blah, blah, blah. Unless Mac is like, guys, you can't win this one. Like this is a thing that you should try to surmount in a different way. Or they know like we can get through to the other side.
So
you know what I mean?
What they were at in that example, it's the Red Skull over the video game.
Exactly.
NPCs,
yes, that's exactly it.
health bar
being like, come back at a higher level. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what they wanted out of that game, where they could sort of say like, you know, we know that we can succeed if we try something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And that's, I mean, it's fair that they would ask for that. I think that that is a game which would benefit from a bit of metagame-y knowledge. But
you guys seem on board with this, but I'm like, I'm opposed to this group of people.
They just have a different way they want to enjoy the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just nothing. It's not a game for me necessarily. Yeah. Although I mean, really feel like, were they new? Sorry, we're diving deep into this.
They're
I
sort
guess.
Of like
tell us everything about these people and why they want this thing.
They're a group of improvisers, and they're a group of people who want to do it more as a social thing than
sure.
as like a win or lose sort of thing.
But did they have a lot of prior D&D experience?
They played a couple campaigns, but like nothing crazy long.
I mean, to me because to me that says like, either they were in games with high lethality, which I know is a possibility with Mac based on stories I've heard.
Yeah.
Or
I mean, I just got done a year-long high lethality campaign with him, which was amazing. And I had a blast, but it was a very different experience
right.
than that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, that could be something where, hey, I'm not really looking for that kind of lethality. I would just like to play a game where I'm a big damn hero is perfectly reasonable thing to say. To me, that's just basic 5e because you do kind of have to go out of your way, especially with anyone past level 5 to kill them.
Well, so here's the thing then is like if you are playing just normal 5e, let's say, where it is very difficult to die and you will basically win a majority of the time.
Yeah.
Is metagaming even a problem?
That's part of why I don't feel that it is. Not necessarily. Like, it really depends on what the metagaming is. Reading ahead in the book, or maybe you've played the campaign. Like, I've played Curse of Strahd a few times at this point in my life. I did everything in my power not to metagame within your Curse of Strahd game.
Except for that one long email.
Which I don't think was metagaming.
Oh, interesting.
But we can dive into
that. Let's dive in a little bit and let's talk about it.
Jump into how you want to justify...
So here's the
telling everyone exactly what.
First, let me explain what happened. Mm-hmm. So Rio was running a Curse of Strahd game. They were getting to the very end, and they were going to be challenging Strahd very soon.
It was also June 2020, so we were new in a pandemic, and it was the world
doing
had shifted.
Virtual,
we were in a virtual game. World had shifted as to how we play.
Yeah, and so Shade sent out an email.
Don't blame the pandemic on
that. Sort of went through and said, "Okay, this is what we have weapons materials wise. This is like what we're facing, and these are my suggestions about how we surmount that." Is that basically right, Shade?
I said we previously discussed in copying Rio that battles go more smoothly if we have a plan. With only one enemy really left, Strahd, and Aaron only available monthly, I figured I'd start an email thread to try and make our final battle as efficient as possible in hopes of not missing any details and not losing session time to planning. That was the email.
So then and then you went through and did
then
the things I
said. I planned some things that I knew as a team that we had, because we had previously discussed it in the game, and said, these are my suggestions. The same kind of thing that if we took a planning session, we might do, but I was making it so that we had time to not, you know, lose an entire session to just planning, since one player was not always accessible.
All right. So everyone, let that kind of rock tumble in your brain. Come up with an idea of whether you think that this is metagame, and we'll talk about it right after this break.
Many miles from here, past all the hustle and bustle of your town, past the mountains and hills, across the rivers and through the forest, there is a meadow. In this meadow are several divots and burrows housing a large and united warren of bunnies.
Well, one day I'm going to go out into the forest and I'm going to meet the forest gods myself.
Why are you showing me this? What does this have to do with me and what's going on in the warren?
It does puzzle me a little bit why the stories from different storytellers are different.
So we're in agreement.
Yes.
I'll see you at the lunch bell.
Bunnies and Burrows, the next Game Master Monday miniseries begins May 6th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. We're talking about metagaming at the table, table talk on Tabletopped. And we, before the break, kind of listed out something that Shay did in a Curse of Strahd campaign that Rio was running. You probably have some thoughts now. You've been rock tumbling it. You think that either this was a horrible case of metagaming or maybe a totally fine strategic planning session. Rio, what are your thoughts?
I don't know. I think I'm.
Let me go through a few things to give you some more info.
Yeah.
So here's, I'm going to highlight, I'm not going to read you the whole email. I talked about the fortunes that we were given. That's a big part of the game. We knew this as characters and players, that there were things that we were seeking out. So I went through, here's what we've sought out. Here's where we stand with the allies that we've gotten, just as a refresher for you all. Because you're not living in that world. You visit that world monthly or something like that. To prepare, here are some things that I think we should do, like retrieve these allies that we already have, but just make sure we have them in our camp with us. Reach out to these allies about possibly joining us because we hadn't secured them yet. Gather any remaining equipment we may need. So things like pickaxes and hammers, stakes and rope. And then I went into some more specific things, like I knew that my character and another character could cast Ceremony. And Ceremony can do certain things like make holy water.
Right.
That would be worthwhile, perhaps. I knew how much gold or monetary wealth we had as a group. I knew that we had some special items that I brought up that we hadn't utilized yet. One of them was, this is a very generous thing that Rio did, he had given us some wish coins. Mm. And I was the only player at that point, or one of the very few players, to have used a wish coin. So it essentially was a single cast of wish, and I used it to cast an 8th level like death blight spell or something like that against a bunch of werewolves because I was like, oh fuck no, I'm not happening. And I took out those werewolves for us. I knew we had 3 left, and I suggested a few spells that might be worth our time. That is where I will say may have been a little metagaming.
Let me also say this as a little background, too, is that Shade, would you agree that Portal is your favorite character that you have?
Oh, it was, and I didn't know I was coming into Curse of Strahd with this character.
Yeah, so
it was
you,
not conveyed to me.
So you were like, like you said once, you're like, fuck no, is Portal going to die in Barovia? Like,
right.
This is just not, this is not how this guy's going out.
I wasn't on board with that idea.
So going back to the earlier idea of like, the stakes were high for you and you were trying to be like, we have to get through this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with all this background, Rio, your judgment.
Oh, I do want to add one more thing. I'm sorry, Rio. I did draft out. This is where it does get. I'm saying this is pretty metagamey, but I said battle strategy. And I laid out like, here's how I think we should try to aim for round one and some things we should do in the following rounds.
Yeah.
Do with that as you please.
You've intertwined metagaming with basic preparation in and out.
Yeah. Like, because
obviously, because players, I don't think player characters know spells exist in sort of the way that players know spells exist. So saying, oh, this spell is a thing that we can do, is like, do the actual players consider magic in that way?
Yeah.
Like, is there a player's handbook of spells that people just know, oh, I can, these are the spells that exist in this world? Another thing that was like kind of meta, I think that was just where I got where it was metagaming, but like, here's our supplies. Like, that's not metagaming
because we know that you love like prep, supplies, tracking, and all that kind of stuff. Like, you like it when players are, do the work of like preparation.
Keeping that.
Yeah.
But I think it does get metagamey when player characters are like, oh, we need to get all of our NPC allies into this fight with us because we, again, you're playing a numbers game and not a story game. Because I feel like in any sort of like in these games, you're the heroes. I don't really think Superman would be like, let me go get, or Batman would go, I'm going to get Commissioner Gordon to come help me in this fight with the Joker because having two
people. What about the Justice League, man? They do that all the time.
They're all superheroes, though.
Yeah, but they go to them and they're like, hey.
But those are, I'm saying, like, these are the superheroes that are grabbing the normal people to, like, come fight with us. The Justice League is like superhero people grabbing other player characters.
I totally agree, but also like...
But you're also saying it wrong.
Well, no, I'm just saying like, in my mind, like Superman basically cannot die, right? He's basically invulnerable to anything except for kryptonite.
He has famously died.
Once. But it's like, he then goes to a bunch of indeed superpowered individuals, people at the, you know, the peak of their chosen
games. Yeah, that's making a party, though.
Yes, but... Aren't all of the NPCs and allies you give like sort of like the top of their groups?
No,
but I will say the fortune aspect of Curse of Strahd specifically tells you that there you should
a
be going.
Specific person.
Yes,
you guys pulled every person you'd ever met.
I actually only referred to four people total,
plus villagers.
That was actually not in my original email.
Not you. I'm just saying a metagaming concept.
Yeah,
making the world fight the battles for you so that you, the player, don't have to.
But
that
from
is
what
metagaming.
But also from what I know of that group, they were reluctant heroes. They were like, we don't want to fucking die. We're going to go in with the best odds,
that's
right?
That's how Curse of Strahd works. Yeah. Reluctant heroes.
So you'd bring all of the villagers to be like, listen, if I can get through this.
Nope.
So this seems like it's like metagaming in a way of like when the DM's idea for what the campaign bumps up against like what the character's idea for how the campaign works. You know what I mean? Like
what? No. Why do you keep saying sentences that make no sense?
What do you mean?
Say that again. Go.
So like for you in this example, your like sort of example of this was, I don't think that heroes in game would go and like gather up villagers to like storm the castle, even though like in Frankenstein, that's what they do, right?
Why are you bringing up Frankenstein? We're talking about a group game,
sure,
of heroes.
Yes,
in which your players are the pieces that you use.
Right.
You don't send other like villagers grouping together. They might do that. That might be a story plot. But the heroes of the game should not be like, oh, we're going to have other people fight this battle for us.
Sure. I don't think like that. That was, we didn't plan on them. We just said in the game, which by the way, again, not in my email. I wasn't like, let's get the entire village.
Yeah.
I said, there are three people who have said they want to be allies, and there's another group of people who might be allies that we should talk to.
Yeah.
And that was all I talked about. But getting I think rallying a revolution is very D&D.
Fuck no. That's not what the game's about. The game's about your heroes. If the village is going to save itself, why are you even there? Why are we even playing this game?
Well, but it's flavor. It's not.
No.
They didn't do the killing. They didn't do any of the real work. Like we still did as the player characters.
Because I wouldn't let them.
Yeah, we weren't going to let them.
And
roll.
You, as any D&D group, should not let their players make the villagers fight the monsters.
I really feel like we're being maligned. We didn't try and make them fight.
I'm saying
Strahd.
That's something you should not do.
Okay.
So you did it.
Okay. I just want to be very clear.
You keep defending something that I'm not accusing you of.
All right.
I'm just saying when it comes to metagaming that like it kind of seems like in this specific case that there is a sense of like I don't want this to happen in the game.
I have a maybe.
And I'm just wondering where that line is like of like in a general way of is it just when a GM's like this isn't the game that I've designed or is it when a player does something kind of arbitrarily like gamey, you know what I mean?
I have a better example for this from the same campaign.
Okay.
So the player that was kind of like there not all the time was our only cleric.
Yeah.
So kind healing. Of an important – well, no. Oh. Not just healing. There are whole big plot point items that are cleric only in this game.
Yeah.
Like the – what is it? The icon, the holy symbol of Ravenkind. Is pivotal to you winning this game.
Yeah.
on a level up, I said, because our guy was like, maybe not there ever, yeah, may not be coming back, may not be there the final battle. On a level up, I said, and I'm going to take a level in cleric. And I do remember having a conversation with you, Rio, about like, why would your character go with a cleric? And
because that is like literally metagaming of like, we need this to happen,
yeah,
right?
And I had reasons for it, but it's something that I have in later iterations of that character phased out.
Yeah.
But it took a long time for me to phase that out.
Yeah.
You know,
and like that's happened in my games too, where like somebody will take either a specific spell or they'll take a specific like direction with their character that is very much so that like future encounters are easier rather than like this is what this character would like want to do or whatever. Like they like how do I say? I'm trying to think of a non-D&D example. It's just D&D is easier because it's more high crunch.
It's like now we're getting into is power gaming metagaming?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is
a
yeah, that's
valid
a great is that the case? Like I don't know.
Yeah.
Like because what you were doing with that was like power gaming of like how do we make this encounter like how do we give ourselves the best possible way to win this encounter, right? Like that was sort of the intention of that email.
Yeah, I mean it was that's definitely kind of the email thing. The cleric level was we have an artifact that is pretty pivotal that we won't get to use if this player can't make it.
Yeah.
And again it's like so I can see how that's metagaming because like how does your character know that this only works for clerics?
Yeah.
What is a cleric?
Yeah.
Like does this world have character classes?
Yeah.
And then going, oh, I'm going to take this level so I can use this artifact. It's like, how do you know that works?
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of, I guess, in the metagaming field of vision. But
yeah,
it's also, again, it's like you have this artifact that exudes a holy power.
Mm-hmm.
Where the line is so hard to draw
a lot
of times. That's why I think metagaming is just never going to go away.
Yeah. So because for me, like, I have such different opinions than most of this table of certain things. Like for me, narrative is like probably the highest point, and like tempo comes like very close after that, and like things that I'm looking for in the game. And so I'll hand wave a lot of stuff that may be kind of meta-y to be like, yep, you do that, and we're gonna like move on, kind of thing. Just because I want the pace to keep up. But like I could see in a survival game that metagaming becomes like a real problem because like if you're trying to get kind of like a realistic, like low resources sort of thing. And someone's like, okay, well, if you cast this and then I cast this, then like that will do this or whatever. That's like the characters might not know that, especially if they're not, there's like a wizard and a cleric. Maybe the wizard doesn't understand or the cleric doesn't understand the wizard spells or whatever, you know? So like.
Right. Assuming that the wizard with his arcane spells knows how divine magic works and how it will interact. That is metagaming.
Yeah.
Unless they have experience and they've.
Yeah. And so like part of it too is sort of like, I don't know. I feel like it, again, it's that communication thing of a session zero sort of thing of like, this is kind of what I like at a table. I don't want this sort of thing to happen during combat as a GM, or I want this sort of interaction to be kept to a minimum, or you can say this much during combat, like in a turn. But sometimes people are like, I want to like yell to someone else like, hey, this thing is resistant to hammers, you know, like that is that a 6-second thing or like what is that? Is an action?
I have a claw side on the hammer. Is it resistant to that?
And have a full back and forth conversation. So if it's like there are some GMs that are like, yeah, that's fine. Like just have like a quick chat or whatever during your turn. And then like you can, but there are others that are like, you say something, you can respond during your turn.
Yeah, this isn't metagaming, but it's still like a really like annoying thing that I find in combat. When the players want to have a full on conversation with each other or the villain. And I was like, you don't have time.
Yeah. So like, I guess, do we think that just the metagaming, like this kind of issue is just more of like a communication problem between players and GMs when it comes to how a game is supposed to function and making those expectations clear? Or is it something that's just like must be quashed kind of thing?
Because it must be quashed. But you have to agree on what the definition of what's being quashed is.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I guess I could agree to that. Like if you set firm rules, then you're just kind of arbitrating the rules, which is kind of a GM's
your
job anyway. Yeah. What about you, Shade? What do you think?
If it's negatively impacting the game, yeah, it has to be dealt with.
But as we've learned, you're both cheaters. So
what did I cheat at?
A lot.
Okay.
A lot.
Don't ask me for examples.
Okay.
I'm making accusations.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I guess that's where I come down on it as well. It's more, this is like a communication problem rather than like a gameplay problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's, there's never going to, like, the most pure form of metagaming is using real world knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. And there's never going, you're never going to play with anyone that is, I don't know, age 15 and above,
yeah,
that doesn't know something about vampires, that doesn't know something about werewolves. Like,
it's even like how to like make a fire or whatever. It's
right.
Like
there are certain things which, yeah, I see what's going on here as a player. I kind of like, you know, I can only play dumb so much.
Yeah.
And I think you need to kind of accept that. To an extent.
Yeah. I kind of feel like as well is that like with the Big Damn Heroes thing is that these people or these characters are in a lot of ways self-inserts.
Hmm.
And so you want to be able to use the knowledge that you have in some ways. So because it is part of the fantasy of like, then I would do this because that is what I would do kind of thing. Like I want to try to make a fire out of this like rope and like Boy Scout style, you know, like that kind of thing. Even though like maybe your character was a city dweller and had only, you know, made a fire in a stove with a magic or something. Yeah, I think that is, it's a sticky wicket, as we would say. Any final thoughts about metagaming in general and stuff like that? I'm not sure we came to a conclusion, but I enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, just don't do it. Try to avoid it at all costs.
Yeah.
And if it's happening, quash it.
Yeah. Actually, I have one more topic to come back to then. How do, as a GM, do you reward not metagaming? Do you at all?
I don't think, because again, like, what example would it be where you're like, here's, you should never be metagaming, so you're just constantly throwing rewards out?
Well,
I don't understand.
Thing,
what do you mean?
So this is a great, so this is the example I'll give. Let's say that a character goes in, it's like, you know, it is a weeping angel statue or something. And like, as a player, you're like, oh, I kind of think I know how this works. But then as a character, you still go in and do the thing, not metagaming that knowledge, yeah, and you're putting yourself in greater danger because of that. Maybe you're even putting yourself in a place where you might be killed. And like, as a GM,
well, I think that's where inspiration comes from.
Yeah, you would. So that's how you would give inspiration out. Is
that's
like,
that's the reason that's to give inspiration. Yeah,
yeah. So because like, that's another thing that I think is why people are cautious in a lot of ways. Going back to the stakes thing, is like, if I play this straight, then like, what if I get killed in a stupid way because of something that I knew that wasn't like the way, like I knew that this wasn't a thing. I knew this was a trap or something, but I still got killed because I was trying to play it as though like I was in character or something. Does that feel like, as a GM, how do you respond to that kind of feeling? I'm not sure. Like, do you reward them for trying to play it straight, or do you still do the thing that they would like to avoid? Like how, a negative experience in game.
But again, it falls back to like a DM prep thing where like nothing should be instantly killable to your players.
Yeah.
So if there's something that might just kill them because they didn't know what it was, that's bad game design.
Hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, to Rio's credit here, you do definitely try and lean into, you know, well, my character doesn't know this. I think you're pretty good about that. The other day we played a game of Dread. Obviously there were so many moments where it's like, well, obviously this is a hallucination that the building or the kid that was causing the hallucinations is put forward, and you still chased after them because it was should have been a friend, and you put yourself in danger multiple times.
Yeah.
So you know, you're good about that, and I think that rewarding that is important. One of the ways I rewarded that for Rio, I tried to not have him pull very much, because he just leaned into the I'm going to do the dumb thing because my character doesn't know better.
Yeah,
and that's great. Other ways that I have rewarded Rio, in addition to inspiration, is not having his character arrested and hung in our Waterdeep game.
Those cops are everywhere in Waterdeep.
Waterdeep has
which was a
over-policed, over-policed districts in Waterdeep are a huge problem. And I think the mask lore should do something about where the funds are going.
Yeah.
Defund the town guard.
Yeah, so I guess that's true, is that you can like reward it as being like, you're playing your narrative well, and I'm respecting the narrative that you have by like accommodating it within mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, I think if you are going to metagame, I do think, yeah, obviously maybe you shouldn't. But I think that, again, you can only feign ignorance so much. And I think that it is perfectly fine for you as a player to say something to the effect of, I know that this is what's going to happen. I want everyone to understand that. I'm going to make a determination on whether or not this character would know this. Let me reason this out with you and have a conversation with the table. Mm. I think that's, you know, yeah.
That's not metagaming.
Well, it's not. But like, but it also
that's
is.
That's avoiding it.
Well, no, I mean, it is metagaming because, like, okay, I know that if I exit the stratosphere, I know this, but, like, maybe,
if Alan's, you know, like, I'm going to fly as far as I can up like that
right,
episode
like
of
the,
how
what
you,
what we
you
do in the shadows, yeah. Like, if you ask me that, you know this, Valen, you know that you're going to go into a voidless, you know, or into a void and that you're going to lose air and you're going to burn up and all that, like, all that's going to happen. You know that as a person. And if you put that forward to me that Valen wants to do this, I think that we would have or maybe I put a reason for Valen to have to do it. Mm-hmm. And we want to reason out whether or not that is kind of metagamey.
Oh,
right?
Well, I would solve that immediately because Valen would have no way of knowing that. He's never flown up that high before.
Well, that's valid. And I appreciate
solved
that.
Your metagaming puzzle by just not metagaming.
Yeah, I know. I used the wrong. I shouldn't have used him as an example here. Because Valen is an idiot.
No, he is not.
No, he's not.
You keep calling him an idiot because he does things that you wouldn't do.
But he also lives in, he's lived in the Seven Hells. He knows where he's sending people.
Yeah.
And he still does.
Well, he's sending bad people. He's okay. Sending people who have hurt others. He's not just doing it randomly.
He has a logic. Yeah.
I have a code.
I have a code and I'm sticking by it. So, you know, but I would say if we were in, you know, your Coronor game, your Esper's game, and you put forward that I watch as this balloon carries a key pivotal item upward. I have the fly spell. I can catch up to it, but it just keeps going up. And at some point I might, you know, I feel like, if I math it out, I feel like I will probably get so far up before I will run out of the spell and maybe I'll catch the item, but I'll run out of the spell and I don't have any more spell slots. Like, I think that kind of gets into that metagamey thing there. And I think that that's worth pausing the game and having a conversation of, I think that I'm going to die if I do this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether my character would know this or not. I want to make this determination. I think that bringing the metagame to the table for a discussion is an appropriate way to metagame.
Yeah. I think.
What do you.
For me.
Again, I don't think you're metagaming. You're saying, does my character know this? And if you're told yes or no, then you're not metagaming.
No, so you're not listening. You're not hearing what. Or sorry, I'm not conveying this well. I'm not asking you. I'm saying, here's what I want to reason out whether or not my character. I'm not saying firm answer, yes or no. I want to discuss whether or not my character has the intelligence to reason out this the way that I am.
Yeah, and I guess there's another thing of, like, and another example of that is going back to the Strahd thing. If instead of being like, I'm taking a level in cleric so that we can use this item or whatever, going to the table and being like, without a cleric, we can't use that item. Like, we know that it's a holy item. Does somebody want to take a cleric level? Like, yeah. That feels metagamey, but at the same time, it is the practical necessities of things in some way, and, like, in engaging with the fiction in that way, too, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's a better example, like, because it's not so much a...
Because you also have to answer the question, like, what level of cleric are you taking? Mm-hmm. Like, what god is going to answer your call at this point?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm going to take this mechanical level. Yeah. Doesn't really work in the story, though, does it? Yeah. Well, the game lets me do it, so I'm going to do it. That, like, does, yeah, that is a little metagame.
Where the game, like, kind of comes up against narrative, where it's like, yeah, it's part of the game for me to be able to do this. It's like, yeah, but, like, that doesn't really make sense in the narrative and all that kind of stuff. Like you said, it's a line that kind of moves on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think by that logic, I would say no one ever can take a hex lock dip again, you know, kind of thing. Like,
yeah, people love that hex lock. Or it's like the cow thing. What was the like summon cow and it drops on someone and it does a crazy amount of damage, like similar to a meteor, but you're like level 3 or something.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it's like.
Oh, right, because there isn't any unoccupied space. So you're like, I choose a space that's in the sky.
Exactly. Yeah. And so like there's stuff that's like, oh, we can do that, and it is what the game allows you to do, but it's like, is that in the spirit of the game?
Like, does unoccupied space mean where it can't actually be, or does it have to be on the ground?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, and it's also like, I wonder, like, because there's also metagamey stuff that I love where it's like, can I try to like use this like teleport spell or whatever, but like teleport this thing into like a wall. You know what I mean? So they're like stuck or they die because they're part of a wall or whatever it is. Like, I kind of love using, and to your point earlier, where it's like the kind of like twisting of something to be like to fit a more creative solution or situation. I kind of love that as a GM, because I'm like, they're really engaged with this and they're trying to do something that like is cool.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, you know, a fork is for eating. But you could also stab somebody with a fork if you need to. I've used silverware as like wedges and stuff to get screws out. Like, a spell is a tool, and you can use a tool a little bit differently than what the actual like description of it is.
Yeah, totally. And it is interesting too, because like it's, and this is like the inverse of metagaming. It's like, I'm in a tavern, I break a bottle, and I use that on someone who's like a bandit who's about to mug me. It's like, yeah, but unarmed or like non-proficient items or whatever, you're going to do like a D4 damage and all this kind of stuff. It's like, so it's actually never good for me to be creative in that way, because mechanically it would be better to draw my short sword and attack and do that kind of stuff. So there's like an interesting thing there too, where it's like, how can you kind of get away from the game in some ways to reward creative, interested thought, which is like kind
I didn't say that if you're just doing that, you just don't treat it as combat.
Totally. Yeah, you could also do that. That's a good idea.
And you don't have to worry about the combat mechanics of an improvised weapon, because you're not in combat yet.
Yeah. That's a good point. Just like not enter the keep it as a skill or a thing that's just happening.
Yeah. I mean, D&D is really weird. The number of times you can get stabbed and not die.
Yeah.
It's like, you can stab me once, I'm going to be pretty much out.
Yeah.
I don't think I would survive 3 stabs. And like, okay, well, that was a D4 of damage.
That's interesting.
I can still go.
I really think, I will say, I think it's going to depend on where you get stabbed and how deeply you get stabbed. But yeah.
No, I think if you stab me anywhere one time, I'm going to be out of that combat.
I've been impaled by a few things.
What?
Yeah, so have I, buddy.
Okay, all right.
All right, so this was an episode of Tabletop. I hope you enjoyed our discussion of metagame. When Frank goes back, maybe we'll return to this issue. Maybe not. Maybe it's just going to be memory hold. We'll find out. If you like Tabletop, go to tabletoppod.com and send us a contact form. We will read your question on the show and answer it. If you're interested in supporting us, whether it's financially or otherwise, head to our Patreon, patreon.com/tabletopped. You can join for free, you can join for as little as $1, and all the way up to $10. There's rewards and prizes for all of them, including an extra podcast per month that we release, amongst others. All right, everyone, we love you very much, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Tabletopped. Goodbye.
Bye.